Joseph comes before Petipre's house. They went toward the desert and the hot desert hills where Ray rose in the morning, and their road lay into the land of God, in front of the sea of the red earth. It was a level road, and they went along it just as they had entered into the vale of Dothan, only that now it was not the thick-lipped youth named Juppa, but Joseph who led the old man's beast. They came on a buttressed ring wall, long and embracing, out of whose inner precinct towered beautiful trees, sycamores, honey locusts, date palms, figs, and pomegranates, and the tops of buildings, shining white or gay with color. Joseph looked over at them, and then at his master, to learn from his face whether this was the abode of the fan-bearer, for it was obviously the house of one with the blessing. But the old man was looking straight before him, with his head on one side. They went along the wall, and he showed nothing until it rose to a tower and a covered gateway. There he stopped. In the shadow of the gateway was a brick bench on which sat boys in aprons, four or five, playing a game with their fingers. The old man looked down on them a while from his beast, till they began to heed. They dropped their hands in their laps and looked at him, raising their brows in pretended amazement to put him out of countenance. "Be of good cheer," said the old man. "Rejoice," answered they, shrugging their shoulders. "What sort of monkey shines may they have been," asked he, "which you broke off because I came?" They looked at each other and laughed in turn. "Because you came," one repeated. "We stopped out of distaste at your own monkey shines, old peddler." "Must you improve your knowledge here, old sand rabbit?" cried a second. "On this very spot and nowhere else that you ask about our game?"
"I have indeed something to peddle," responded the old man, "only not monkey shines, however complete my pack, for I know not the where. But take it from your distaste that you have a superfluity of it yourselves. Hence, then, probably your need of diversion, which, if I be not mistaken, you satisfy by the amusing game of how many fingers?"
"Well, then?" they asked.
"I only inquired in passing and by way of preliminary," he went on. "Is this, then, the house and garden of the noble Petipre, fan-bearer on the right hand?"
"Whence know you that?" they asked.
"My memory instructs me," he answered, "and your answer confirms it. But you, as it seems, are set as watchers at the gate of the exalted man to announce the familiar guests?"
"Then you are familiar guests? Bush rangers and snappers up from the desert? You would sell us a cell, old man."
"Young guardian of the gate and bringer of tidings," retorted the Ishmaelite, "you deceive yourself, and your knowledge of the world is unripe as green figs. We are no snappers up and fly-by-nights, but hate all such, and are their true opposite in the scheme of things. For we are travelling traders, who go here and there between kingdoms, and make fine connections, so that we are well received, as everywhere else, so here too, and in this house, whose storehouses gape for our wares. For the moment we stand rebuffed by your lack of manners. But I counsel you, become not guilty before Montcaw, your head, who is over the house, and calls me his friend, and treasures my treasures. Rather, fulfill the service which is vouchsafed you in the scheme of things, and run to announce to the steward the well-known travelling traders from Ma'on and from Mosar. In short, the Midianite merchants are once more at hand, with good things for the houses, chambers, and barns." The watchers had exchanged looks at hearing him name the name of the steward. "Now," said he whom the Ishmaelite had addressed, a chubby-cheeked, narrow-eyed lad, "how then shall I announce you to him? Bethink yourself of that, old man, and go your ways. Can I come running to him and say, 'The Midianites from Mosar are at hand, therefore have I left the gate where at midday the Lord will enter, and run to disturb you?' He will call me the son of a dog, and take me by the ear. He is settling accounts in the bakery, and speaking with the scribe of the buffet. He has more to do than to haggle with you about your wares. Therefore, go hence. "It is pity for you, young doorkeeper," said the old man, "that you make yourself a hindrance between me and my years-long friend Montcalm, standing between us like a river full of crocodiles and a mountain of impassable steepness. Are you not called Sheshy?"
"Sheshy?"
"Ha ha!" laughed the gatekeeper. "I am called Tetty."
"It is all the same," responded the old man. "It is only my pronunciation, and because in my old age some teeth are lacking me that I spoke it otherwise. Well, then, Chechi, though that is no better, alas. Let me see if a dry ford does not lead through the river, and mayhap a curving path round the steepness of the mount. You have made a blunder in calling me a snapper-up. But here," he put his hand in his garment, "is something of the sort, and very pretty, too, that belongs to you, if you will run and announce me, and bring hither Montcalm. There, take it from my hand. It is but a small example of my treasures. Look, the sheath is of hardest wood, finely etched, and has a slot, out of which you push the diamond-sharp blade, and lo, there is the knife. But if you press the blade down to the handle again, it snaps into its bed and rests secure in its sheath, so that you can hide the thing in your apron. What do you say now?" The youth came forward and tried the spring of the knife. "Not bad," said he. "Is it mine?" And he pocketed it. "From the land of Mosar," he asked. "And from Ma'on. Midianite traders. Wait a little." And he went through the gate. The old man looked after him, laughed, and shook his head. "We have forced the stronghold of Fel," he said, "and passed through Pharaoh's border watchers and military scribes. We shall pass here, too, and win to my friend Montcalm." And he gave a little cluck, which was a sign to his beast to lie down. Joseph helped him to dismount. The other riders got down, too, and they waited. After a while, Tetti came back and said, "You are to come in, into the court. The overseer will come." "Good," replied the old man. "If he has the wish to see us, we will take time and oblige him, although we must still go on." And led by the young keeper, they passed through the covered gateway, which echoed to their tread, into a court covered with hard clay. They faced an open double gate flanked by shady palm trees. It stood in the brick wall of the square inner court, and through slits in the wall they could see the house with its fine mouldings, its entrance between painted columns, and on the roof its three-cornered ventilators opening to the west. It lay in the center of the grounds, surrounded on west and south by the green depths of spacious gardens. The court was large, with many open spaces among the buildings which stood facing westwards, without any wall, on the north side of the property. The largest building extended on their right, long, gay, and charming, guarded by watermen. Through its doors went maidservants with tall jugs and platters of fruit. Other women sat on the house roof, spinning and singing. Farther westwards, against the northern wall, was another house from which steam was rising, and before which people were busy beside vats and grain mills. Yet another house lay farther west behind the orchard, and workmen were busy in front of it. At the back, in the northwest corner of the ring wall, lay cow stalls and corn granaries with ladders against them, an estate rich in blessing beyond a doubt. Joseph glanced over it quick-eyed, seeking to penetrate everywhere. But he had little time, for his help was needed in the task which his master undertook as soon as they entered. They unloaded the camels and set up shop on the clay pavement between the gate and the master's house, spreading out their wares that the overseer, or whoever else among his people desired to buy, might be tempted by the alluring contents of their packs.